Hi, everyone. Thank you for joining today's live discussion titled Gridlock: How Can You Reduce Your Reliance on Grid Power? Brought to you by Africa's leading monthly mining publication, Mining Review Africa, and sister magazine, ESI Africa. Powering new and existing mining operations in Africa is considered one of the biggest constraints to delivering and maintaining sustainable mining operations in remote regions. With grid power seldom a viable option and the cost of diesel generator fuel steadily increasing, renewable energy alternatives are becoming increasingly attractive as costs continue to reduce. This power solution, however, does come with its own set of unique challenges to consider, but nonetheless can be incorporated into new and existing mining operations profitably when determining the long-term cost savings benefits and the economic upliftment it provides to communities. Joining us today to discuss this topic at length are three high-level energy expert panelists, including Anders Kajos Pedersen, Chief Regional Power Systems Officer for the African Development Bank, Ian Curry, an independent renewable energy expert, and Tobias Hobach, Founder and Managing Director of Sustainable Power Generation. Moderating the discussion will be Mining Review Africa Editor-in-Chief, Laura Cornish. And to find out more about our panelists, you can toggle through the speaker tab at the top right screen of your screen. Before we begin, I'd like to encourage you to use the Q&A box on the left-hand side of your screen for our audience Q&A session towards the end of today's webinar. Our panelists will endeavor to discuss these and answer them within the allocated time. Today's discussion will also be available for you to access on demand on the Mining Review Africa website. Thank you again for joining us today. Laura, I'll hand over to you.
Thanks. For those of you who have just joined us, welcome to today's webinar. I will now open the floor and give each of our panelists the opportunity to provide us with a quick introduction to the webinar topic before we commence with the panel discussion. Ian, let me start with you. Can you give me an opening statement and some context on our discussion today?
Hi, Laura. Thanks. I think really, for me, the point is not taking mines off-grid and switching 100% to renewable energy. I really think this is a matter of effective energy planning for mining operations, looking at their energy requirements and approaching it in a systematic way, considering the reduction in operating costs and achieving the lowest levelized cost of energy for a mine. And that involves short, medium, and long-term energy planning, as a mine would do in terms of its resource extraction planning and operational plans. So I think that's really the approach that needs to be taken. What renewable energy, and particularly wind and solar, particularly solar, has enabled is alternatives for embedded or self-generation at these mines. And that's opened up this this very exciting era that we find ourselves in with regards to independence or a level of independence from grid-supplied electricity to mining operations and other operations, you know, whether they be mining, heavy industry, or whatever. So I think that's really the position that I would take on this, is that it's not just about renewable energy, it's about optimizing the energy balance and energy requirements of a mine going forward.
Excellent. Thanks, Ian. Tobias, let me hand over to you for your opening statement.
Yeah, thanks, Laura. I think from my point of view, I think it's important to note that when discussing the mining industry or any other industry and its power requirements in the African off-grid context, we shouldn't leave out of sight the global challenge or the continental challenge at large. 70% of the population Africans, sub-Saharan Africans, do not have access to electricity. That's 600 million people in the mines, around the mines, and then everywhere else on this continent. So looking at access to electricity, alternative access to electricity, affordable access to electricity has to be seen in that greater context. And a trend we're seeing in industry, but also in rural electrification endeavors, is to provide electricity in a leapfrog approach. So similar to what we saw with landline becoming displaced by cell phone, technology, it's no longer a matter of pulling wires across the continent. It's about decentralized power generation. And we've spent the last 3 years developing technologies and solutions that are Africa-proof, that work for mines industries, but also for mini-grids that embrace clean technologies such as gas and power or solar in a turnkey containerized format so that they're easy deployable, so that the power generation goes to where the power demand is. And examples of those look like what you can see in the screen there, where turnkey pre-commissioned, pre-configured, pre-tested setups become quick deployment solutions that get installed to replace dirty and more expensive diesel generation. So I think it needs to be seen in a greater picture. Mines have a social responsibility as well. So thinking of energizing rural Africa in the context of the mining power supply, I think is a relevant topic.
Excellent, Tobias. Thank you very much. And Anders, let me hand over to you to share your views on the topic. Anders, are you there?
Sorry, mute. Embarrassing. I'm from the African. And let me just introduce our interest in this topic. We are well aware that, as my colleagues have already indicated, that mines have huge energy needs, and they have often unique energy needs. I think this is a very important aspect, that if we are aiming to provide solutions that either have a mine as an anchor customer, if you're talking about a green mini grid, or we're aiming for a mine to be a customer of a smaller system, an isolated system, we need to take into perspective that mines often have quite a large need for an instantaneous energy buffer. They need inertia, voltage and frequency stability. They often need 24/7 supply, and then obviously we need to be able to provide energy at a cost level that is attractive to the mines, that allows them to make a profit and provide work and employment for people in the affected area. On the right hand side of my opening slide, there's a few statements on how prices are continuing to come down on various renewable energy sources. Probably a lot of this is well known to people. Let me just jump to the next one as well that gives more details. It's a bit hard to see, but I think the trend is very clear to everybody, especially wind and solar have been coming down dramatically the last decade. Wind is now estimated to be the cheapest form of power when there are good wind resources available. The African Development Bank is a AAA rated bank, and we have a number of areas that we tend to focus on working in. For the purpose of this presentation, we work in power, we work in the industrial space, and of course we try to improve the quality of life for the people of Africa. Maybe I should just stop here and hand it back to you, Laura.
Thanks, Anders, and thank you to the gentlemen for their opening statements. Before we move into today's panel discussion, I'd like to remind the audience to please use the question and answer box on the left-hand side of your screen to pose any questions to our speakers. I would also like to ask the audience to keep an eye out for the survey we will be posting about halfway through today's discussion. I would encourage you all to vote. Moving now into our panel discussion, my first question is addressed to Ian. Ian, do you think mining companies are fully evaluating all of their energy options right from the start, and how would they benefit by doing so?
So, Laura, I think I think what mining companies are at the stage now, particularly now from a South African context, with the promulgation of the carbon tax coming through, and the rapidly increasing cost, particularly of electricity, and due to the deterioration of the rand, the increase in the liquid fuel costs as well, energy input into the mine is becoming such a significant cost or a percentage of their OPEX that this is now elevating their focus with regards to alternative energy options and better energy planning. Unfortunately, mining is a very conservative industry, and what you're finding is that executives in mining companies realize that there is this energy risk that does need to be dealt with, but more often than not, you hear this comment that, yes, but we're miners, we're not power generators. So that opens themselves up to a lot of approaches by a multiplicity of independent power producers, technology providers, and that. And with all sorts of very sophisticated financing methods and methodologies, which, in my opinion, is actually exposing mines to even greater risk because they are not sufficiently educated in this aspect of energy planning and can fall foul of entering into long-term offtake agreements that are not really best suited to the mine. And as a result of that, I think it comes back to an issue of energy planning. And Tobias Bishop Nymphs and Terence Creamer recently published an excellent book called South Africa's Energy Transition, a Roadmap to a Decarbonized, Low-Cost and Job-Rich Future. Although it doesn't apply directly to mines themselves, the approach taken in this book and the explanations given to how one would approach energy planning for a country can so well be adapted and applied to a large mining operation as well, where you have residential users as well as industrial or mining applications as well, different demand cycles, and then getting balance. And I think that's really what mines have to be looking at is this long-term and strategic energy plan for the mines right from the outset and optimizing this from a lowest levelized cost of energy perspective. That's really what they need to do. So I think they're starting, but they've got a long way to go. And I think it does create a lot of opportunity for the RPP space as well to work collaboratively with mines in getting this right.
Excellent. Ian, thank you so much. I think one of the considerations we need to think about when talking about the subject is finance. So, Anders, my next question is for you. Tell me, how easy is it to access funding from development finance institutions such as yourself to implement independent off-grid solutions and the typical deal structure of these capital investments?
Thank you, Laura. I think the question comes in two parts, so I'll try and divide my answer into two parts. So typically, development finance institutions, including the African Development Bank, is not only looking for, return on equity when we make these investments. We are typically looking for, other benefits, either the affected community, a reduction in pollution, the reduction in CO2 impact, and so on. I think one of the messages that I have to interested mining companies is that, yes, we do look for projects that are financially viable, but we are also equally looking for sort of additional auxiliary benefits to the global environment or for the national environment or the regional environment. The typical deal structure is often that a bank like ourselves, we have windows for the private sector and for the public sector, just like the World Bank has a public sector window and it has its own in private sector, we now call it the IFC. We have it on the one hand, but we're basically structured the same way. What typically happens is that we will part finance an investment. We might take the bottom tranche, and we might be useful to engage very early on, because our commitment can unlock more expensive financing from other institutions. I'll stop there.
Excellent. Anders, thank you so much. I think it's interesting to note, however, that the availability of traditional grid-connected power generation is slowly increasing via large-scale power plants across Africa. Tobias, why do you think, why is the creation of alternative decentralized energy solutions important in Africa despite this?
So I think there are several factors to consider. I can think of three. The first one would be cost. Although access might be available, there's sometimes a disconnect between theoretic availability and practical availability. Connection costs are relatively high, so getting hooked up to the grid is for the last mile is often a challenge. But even if you are connected and you get supplied from a national utility, as we find them across the continent, energy costs are increasing. Most countries have embarked on cost-reflective tariffs. So as we experienced here in South Africa recently, utilities are forced to increase electricity costs significantly. And I think this trend will continue. So with electricity costs increasing, the case for renewable energy alternatives are getting better and better. As we saw on Anders' slide, the cost of electricity from renewable sources, from wind and solar, have come down so dramatically that there is a business case just comparing grid-connected power, especially when extrapolating over the next few years compared to renewable sources. The second aspect, although connected to the grid, and also South Africans know that very well, doesn't necessarily mean that you have that you can enjoy reliable energy. So being struck by dirty power or power outages regularly speaks to finding your own decentralized power supply alternatives. Constantly running on diesel backup generators is just a very bad business case. And then lastly, there's an environmental factor as well. More and more local but predominantly international companies are looking at reducing their CO2 footprint, quite rightfully so. They're measured by internal sustainability scorecards. And if you try and reduce your CO2 footprint while using Eskom's coal-dominated power, you struggle. So taking this into your own hands will open up opportunities.
Excellent. Tobias, thank you so much. I think, there obviously is interest in renewable energy solutions. And what are some of the important considerations when implementing these renewable energy solutions, particularly in the remote regions of Africa?
Well, I think, speaking from the point of view of representing a bank, the starting point needs to be that proposed solutions are bankable, meaning either there is and basically that normally means that the energy solution that we are being asked to finance produce a decent return to the developers. That means that costs have to be realistic and the technology has to be robust. And then, as I think I said also in my introduction, we are, because we have a mandate way beyond just making profit, we look a lot at what the stakeholder benefits are. And that means, for instance, that the project will not only provide the renewable energy project or the energy project would not only provide energy to the mine, but it will provide energy to surrounding communities and so on. And I must stress that we are not necessarily looking, the business model that we are looking at is not that a mine would subsidize surrounding villages or anything like that, simply that the mine would enter into a cooperative spirit with ourselves as a funder to sure that people in a decent distance from the mine would also have access to electricity at cost-reflective tariffs.
Excellent, thank you. Ian, my next question is for you. Tell me, what do you think is the importance of off-grid clean energy, green mini-grids for Africa's development, both from a mining point of view and also from a community development perspective?
Laura, I think this is one of the great opportunities that a transition to partial independence or full independence of Oman in terms of grid supplied electricity opens up. I've worked in the mining industry for a number of years, and this issue of community development and community involvement is essential. Many of the remote mines in Africa, and globally for that matter, the economy that forms around that mine is 100% dependent on that mine. And as we all know, a mine has a limited lifespan. And I truly believe that the application of and the implementation of renewable energy resources and the production of electricity, initially using the mine as the anchor off-taker, but then ultimately at the end of that life of mine, being able to then continue to export electricity into the broader grid, should the grid have gotten there by that time, but should be part of your end of mine life planning, is a way for mining companies to create sustainable economies that last beyond the life of the mine. It's an essential aspect, and it's something that, with all due respect to the mining companies, has been, it's pitiful the way the local communities are actually involved and truly empowered, and how the local economies are considered on a long-term basis. These mines are there for 10, 20, 30, 40 years, depending on the resource and the rate of mining. And that is sufficient time to create a sustainable economy going forward. But it requires long-term planning and strategic thinking and the implementation of these plans and close collaboration, where the communities become partners to the mines, as opposed to just a source of labor, and in many cases, a source of irritation and disruption, which should never be the case. The communities could truly develop, and utilizing the mine as their primary off-taker in the initial life of the mine would enable these economies to become mature and sustainable. So I'm so strongly in support of this, and I really think that and encourage mining companies to look at energy and embedded energy as a way of dealing with the end of mine life issue that often gets kicked down the road and ignored and not dealt with properly, as we've seen the consequences with some of the abandoned mines around Johannesburg and other parts of South Africa.
Ian, wow, thanks for such interesting points of view on that. Another point we really should be discussing is not only the benefits and how wonderful renewable energy could be for the mines, but the challenges that come with that. Bryce, can you talk us through some of the current challenges that we could face in implementing independent off-grid power solutions in Africa, and perhaps how we could have overcome those challenges?
Yeah, I think there are... several different ways of looking at challenges and clustering them. I think at first, a mine or any other industry would need to overcome the internal challenges, and previous commenters have elaborated on those. So once the decision is there, when the financing is available, the operating model of independent power supply, be it on a PPA basis with an IPP or on balance sheet embedded, once all of those decisions have been taken and the preparation has been done and the technology has been chosen, I see two main hurdles. One is the legislative hurdle, and that is very very unique to any country, to any location, to any operation. Some areas might experience very low hurdles. Others, when it comes to power generation licenses and a certain limit, might be more difficult to overcome. When those are out of the way, I think then we're down to operational hurdles, operational challenges. So a very remote location in the middle of the DRC or any other place, struggle to get power generation equipment to site, get trained personnel to site. Probably all of that can be handled through EPC to get installed. But then there's also the maintenance and operation components that needs to be taken into consideration. And when we talk about solutions to these challenges, especially the technical challenges, I think are being addressed by various players in the industry, and it's become almost common practice to supply turnkey solutions, automation, technology, some parts of the processes in mines and other industries, and also now power generation equipment is supplied fully wired up, tested, containerized, as you can see on my slide, for example. It just reduces activation time. It makes systems available for remote monitoring and reduces the amount of potential problems.
Awesome, Tobias. Thanks so much for your insight there. Before we carry on with our panel discussion, I'm going to take a short break and at this point ask our audience to please vote in our survey. The question we're asking is for you to consider what factors would most entice you to incorporate renewable energy into your mining operations. We have five different responses or options to choose from. Number one would be to reduce operating costs. Number two, to reduce environmental impacts. Number three, to ensure long-term sustainability for a region. Number four, to reduce grid reliance. And number five, all of the above. Please do participate in our survey question today. Resuming with our discussion, Anders, let me pick up with you. Can you tell me what types of small to medium independent power solutions are viable to implement in Africa based on your experience?
Yes, I think the previous speaker, Tobias, sort of alluded to a lot of what I may also want to stress. So let me start with what I actually said, I think, in my opening slide about mines are a special customer. I think we need to be aware of the fact that mines are not consumers or users of energy who can, like a normal little off-grid solution in Africa, people can live without having power for a day or two if they need to. So the emphasis in the mining sector must be on, robustness and probably also on hybrid solutions so that 24/7 supply can be provided. And also which Tobias mentioned, is that things like turnkey installations that are reliable, remote monitoring and control, et cetera, plays a very, very strong role in these solutions. And they will be solutions or systems. Most promising is, without doubt, solar. But as we all know, the sun doesn't always shine. There is probably a lot more mileage in looking into biomass solutions than what is commonly being discussed in the industry. There are countries in Africa where biomass is concentrated and biomass can be deployed, and it's relatively reliable and cheap to do. And then in certain locations, wind is very, very attractive. And then, of course, should you have a river or a source of water nearby and the possibility of doing a small-scale hydro, that is the traditional first call also for the mining industry. Let me stop there.
Anders, thanks so much for that. And something we haven't spoken about up until this point is technology. Can you tell me which technologies do you expect to dominate in the future and why?
Laura, I'm a firm advocate of there's no one silver bullet in terms of energy generation and or electricity generation in terms of this. You know, it really is about looking at the primary energy resources that a mining operation has that it could possibly convert into electricity for utilization on the mine, conducting the proper techno-economic studies and analysis of those different primary energy resources to determine how it fits into your overall life of mine planning and cost of operations. And then also leaving space for the different financing methodologies, how those technologies are going to be financed. Because, you know, one thing is if you're looking for external funding or bank funding of any sort, then it's got to be a proven technology. Whereas if it's self-financed, there could be more innovative, less commercially proven from a bankability perspective technologies that a mine could consider. And how that risk is managed. So there is no one silver bullet. I do think, though, that energy storage technologies really will have a profound influence on which generation technologies end up dominating the industry in the future. And, you know, globally with the very real, not threat of climate change, but the reality of climate change that we're experiencing. The amount of brain power and innovation globally that is going into new electricity generation technologies must not be underestimated. And these coming to the fore, should not, trying to back a horse here would be foolish and unnecessary, to be honest. You've got to look at the specific location of the operation, the primary energy resources that are available, including grid-supplied electricity and fossil fuel, or non-renewable energy resources, to come up with what is best for your mining operation and the strategic objectives of that mine in terms of, shareholder expectations, investor expectations from an environmental impact perspective, from a market competitiveness perspective, and managing that whole factor. I certainly wouldn't back any one single technology, and I don't think one can.
Brilliant. Ian, thanks so much. Something to look at or consider at this point is perhaps projects that our speakers have been involved in. Tobias, can you provide insights into an off-grid energy project that you have been involved in, maybe sharing insights into some of the specific challenges around that project as well as some of the successes?
Yeah, thanks, Laura. I'll start with probably mentioning a couple of project opportunities that came our way and what their challenges were. So in particular, mining inquiries, so be it small coal miners in an open pit operation, off grid, running diesel gensets, looking for alternatives to the diesel gensets, or larger operations. They all struggle, and Ian mentioned that with what is my baseload alternative with renewables. So in the absence of affordable large scale storage, although we're getting there slowly, but it's not yet the common application for the man in the street. What alternatives are there? And what we are looking at more and more are a combination of hybrid solutions, either with the existing diesels, where the bitter pill to swallow will still be that we won't get rid of the diesel for a while, but we reduce its runtime and therefore its fuel consumption considerably, or to switch the diesel over to a cleaner fossil fuel, which would be natural gas. We are currently busy with such a natural gas solar hybrid project, a large multi-megawatt project in early stages, but it's clearly an interesting experiment. A project we did a few months back in South Sudan, was a diesel hybrid project. It was in the mine. It was a commercial operation that was 100% off-grid, running on a number of diesel gensets. With a containerized pre-configured solar and storage system, we were able to reduce their diesel consumption by 70%. So the diesels only run for a couple of hours at night to recharge the batteries, and during the day, solar and batteries take over the load. It required, and that was one of the challenges, it required a bit of load management, and that's something not to be underestimated, where people are used to running diesel gensets slightly oversized. They can plug in any consumer they want. If you go with a renewable, especially battery power system, you do need to keep an eye on your consumer. So load management, some load shedding even, might become a necessity. But that's to be overcome. So that would be an example I can share.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. Anders, I'd like your opinion at this stage, please, on if you think that there is a mining company that can set the benchmark in off-grid or independent renewable energy, and tell me why.
I'm afraid that I don't have a good example, and maybe my colleagues can also jump in here. Maybe they have one. But I do have an example of a very exciting existing off-grid project that I think is very similar to the challenges that the mining industry has. Let me just bring it up here on the screen. In the Northern Hemisphere, in the Arctic, in Canada, Alaska, and Greenland, which is part of my country, Denmark, there's a very long tradition for off-grid solutions and mini-grids. And Kodiak Island in Alaska has a very, very promising system that has proven to be very reliable and have some characteristics that I think is similar to what the mining industry in Africa might be looking for. 99% of the energy is provided by hydro and wind on Kodiak Island, and they have a mixture of batteries and flywheels to back up these intermittent solar. I think the flywheels are, I'm not advertising for any particular company here, but flywheels are interesting because they can provide instantaneous power. They can provide the torque that heavy industrial use require. And that was the challenge, has been the challenge in the Arctic, and it was the flywheels that provided the key in Kodiak Islands so that electrical cranes get enough instantaneous power to operate. And with the flywheels backed up by batteries, they are actually running on 99% renewable energy at a far lower cost than the old diesel-powered power station that they had on that island. Let me just add one thing. The issue of hybridization was raised here, and I think we need to be realistic. A lot of solutions in Africa, and we would be willing to fund that as well. We don't need to be fundamentalist about things. We can entertain hybrid systems that also has fossil fuel generation as part of the solution, as long as the business case indicates a strong move away from fossil fuel towards more use of renewable energy, we're willing to talk. Let me stop there.
Brilliant. Gentlemen, thank you so much for your expertise and your knowledge and to creating such an engaging discussion. I would now like to reveal the results of the survey question, which we posed to you earlier, asking you to consider what factors would most entice you to incorporate renewable energy into your mining operations. The results are very interesting. There's not a clear leader or winner in our five options, but the majority of our audience at 40% voted in favor of reducing operating costs. This is followed with a 30% stake on reducing grid reliance, as well as the option for all of those options above. Our last two points are just above 20%, and that is reducing environmental impacts and ensuring long-term sustainability for the region. It is an interesting outcome, and I'd like to give our panelists an opportunity to share their thoughts on the results. If you can just ask each of you for a quick, short roundup. Ian, let me start with you. What do you think of those results?
I think the obvious one is the fact that reducing operation costs is a key focus of mining. Particularly South African mines are under a lot of pressure from an operational cost perspective, so it makes absolute sense. And that's why I really strongly promote and advise that mining companies look at these, at seriously investigating and implementing a proper energy strategy for the remainder of their life of mine planning. And introducing greater and greater embedded generation solutions or alternatives to grid solutions that give them the cost benefit that they require, and with renewables being cheaper than most fossil fuel generated electricity solutions, they're going to get the environmental benefits nevertheless. So that's my take on it.
Excellent, Ian. Thanks so much. Tobias, what are your thoughts on the results?
Yeah, I'm not surprised that 35% chose option 5, which I would have gone for, which is all of the above. I think each one of the four motives are very valid, and not one of them can be ignored. It's just the right thing to do, and I think we've heard all the arguments for all of them. So, yeah, I think no surprise there when it comes to the results.
Thanks so much, Tobias. And just a quick short roundup from your perspective on the results.
Yes, allow me to focus on the winner, reducing operating costs. We can do it. The mining industry can do it. We can all do it if we start seriously working on energy planning, renewable energy resources, long-term thinking. There is one aspect that we haven't discussed about, given the time constraint. Of course, investments in renewable energy start by energy efficiency. The first step is really for mines and other people considering green mini-grid solutions is to first work on energy efficiency. And once those opportunities have been identified, move to partial or full renewable energy integration into the existing or future operation. And it can be done, and it can be done cost effectively.
Excellent. Gentlemen, thank you again so much for your input. That does unfortunately bring us to the end of our panel discussion, but we do now have the opportunity to engage directly with our audience to answer some of their very burning and interesting questions. We've had phenomenal response from our audience, and I'm going to commence with some of the questions that our audience have asked. Let me start with question number 6, and Anders, this is for you. How does a person start a business of renewable energy mining in a mining community?
Here I have to interpret the question a little bit. I assume that the person who's asking the question is looking at how can renewable energy be provided to people in surrounding communities. There are a number of very, very good and reliable solutions, around solar home systems. If what is required is a TV, a radio, some light, et cetera, charging your phone, maybe running a small restaurant or a small bunker, as we call it in East Africa. There are extremely good and reliable solar home system providers out there, and they are moving incredibly fast, serving up new solutions. Since I'm an international bureaucrat, I'm not allowed to mention individual company names, but I think a Google survey will easily identify some of the very promising providers in this field.
Thanks so much. Ian, the next question is for you. It comes from the Energy Research Centre at the University of Cape Town. And they're asking, for South Africa specifically, and other countries in Africa as well, how do you see solving the regulation challenges of embedded or off-grid power generation licensing with liberal PPAs or own use, wheeling, etc., in regulated state-owned monopoly electricity utilities?
That's what I'd call a hospital pass, but anyway. look, I think the regulatory environment is, as we all know, is a major challenge and has restricted the growth of these applications around the world. I am very encouraged that energy and mining now falls under one ministry and that Mr. Montashe, who heads that up, really sees the need to accelerate and give certainty in regards to these things. So I think it is a little bit of a wait and see as to how this goes. What I do think is what cannot be overlooked, though, is that mines that want to implement their own embedded generation solutions, the requirement for ministerial determinations or the complexity of PPAs, wheeling, etc., is reduced, and there are some fairly innovative ways of implementing those projects of that nature that enable you to work within the current regulatory frameworks within South Africa. But it's not easy, and I do think it is going to be opened up in the medium term, short to medium term, that these opportunities will open up for us. But initially on a small scale and then growing sequentially beyond that. It is a tough one, but I think continual lobbying and, the current economic crisis that South Africa is in and the need to support the mining industry, and particularly because it's such a major employer in this country, has got to get policymakers and government a lot more open to these ideas. And we are seeing that in the new government, that there is a greater willingness to engage industry and mining in terms of preserving jobs and creating more jobs. The time is right now for that to start happening. And I remain cautiously optimistic that we will see the necessary changes coming through.
Thanks, Ian. Anders, would you like to comment on that question as well?
Just a very quick comment. I promise to make it short. What we are finding in the African Development Bank is that the regulation in a number of African countries is becoming lighter in terms of what is called captive power, power for your own needs. And we're seeing movements in, for instance, Mozambique towards captive power having a much lighter regulatory burden. It is actually potentially a problem for us in the development business because it is still that the license button is still there if you want to provide power to surrounding communities. And so that is actually an interesting conundrum for us. While we welcome that captive power is being somewhat deregulated, we are concerned that paradoxically could actually make it less easy to provide power to surrounding communities.
Excellent, Anders. Thanks so much. Tobias, I have a question from our audience for you, and they are asking, what is the most remote or rural system that you have installed? Looking at how significant are the logistical issues of transportation of equipment to extreme rural areas?
So the most remote was probably the northern tip of Malawi, where we installed a solar mini grid. One of the biggest challenges, though, we had shipping a system to South Sudan, this project I mentioned earlier. Besides the very bad roads and the many obstacles that causes, I think the biggest challenge are always border crossings. They are still somewhat unpredictable. I think our containers sit at Ugandan South Sudanese border for 4 weeks, awaiting clearance. So that is one of the challenges that I don't really have a recipe how to address, but using reputable and experienced freighting companies, I think, is a must. Logistics, and everybody knows this, is really not to be underestimated when moving goods, when moving equipment across borders around Africa.
Excellent. Thanks so much. I have a strong mining background, and I have a very good mining question, which has been directly addressed to Ian. Ian, the question is asking, what is your view on the life of mine, of South African mines? And how would this impact on a mine's decision to build a solar plant or to go into a PPA with an IPP, as the financiers do not want a PPA that is less than 15 years? So what do you think is the alternative, as most mines in South Africa have lifespans less than 10 or 7 years?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think that's a given, that the affordability of, what drives the ultimate cost of electricity from an IPP is to a large extent driven by the cost of capital and the debt tenor and the financing period that the project is financed over. So unfortunately, it's a factor of the current economic trading environment and the current loan structures that are available. Also, the risk premium that is put on two projects of this nature with a single off-taker being a mine is a big issue, which does make that quite expensive, particularly for mines that are looking at driving down or marginal mines that have to drive down the operational costs. So it's a reality. There are some fairly innovative ways that have been put forward. I don't know of any that have actually been implemented to date, where longer-term funding tenors are given beyond the life of mine because of the intent of creating demand within the local economy around that mine and enabling offtake on that basis, and also considering the end of mine rehabilitation time period and taking it into consideration as well, so that there's some sort of stock gap the mining company remaining involved post the end of the life of mine of the actual ore body that's being extracted. But it's a fact of life. It's something that one has to get around, and the financiers want their money back with the return that they were promised. And so if you're planning to implement these projects, life of mine is a primary factor in determining the viability of a project of this nature. If you only got 5 years left, you're going to have some pretty impressive technology that will be able to pay back in such a short period of time.
Thanks, Ian. I have a very interesting, short, sharp question which I'm going to address to Tobias. Tobias, what would you say is your first suggestion or recommendation? Off-grid or mini-grid?
So, mini-grid. I struggle a bit because we might have a definition issue here. There are several definitions around mini-grid. Mine is that these are off-grid grids, so small grids. Distributing power between various users, by definition, not on a utility grid and therefore off grid. So, if we have the choice between I do my thing off grid, generate power only for myself, or I team up with other users and we form a mini grid, as we are in a similar situation, going into energy sharing agreements with other people is always a bit of a challenge, but it would certainly be the better thing to do, as you can generate efficiencies and share fixed costs and so on. So I think we would need a bit more context to that question to elaborate a bit more.
Fair enough. Thanks, Tobias. Anders, my next question is for you. From a banking perspective, I do think you understand country risk. So the question is, how do you handle country risk? For example, would you get involved in a mine power plant related project in a country such as Sudan?
Now you're putting me on the spot, huh? We have mechanisms that can deal with fragile states. Certain countries are categorized as fragile states. We have extra capital. We have extra instruments that we can deploy in terms of risk mitigation. We sometimes, in countries like Sudan or Somalia or some other countries that are fragile, we will sometimes make a grant available to make the project attractive to an IPP. So there is nothing that stops us. Let me rephrase that. We uniquely have some extra funding available to engage also in countries like Sudan. So yes, we can do that. Obviously, we have to balance our portfolio. So it's not like that the African Development Bank will put all its funding into very risky countries, but up to a certain level, we have a great appetite for engaging in fragile countries, and a mine could actually be fairly attractive in the sense that mines normally export and therefore generate foreign currency, making the PPA a lot more viable.
Thanks. And Tobias, would you like to comment on that question?
Yeah, country risk is not to be underestimated, and what Anders referred to is of course from a financial point of view, financial risks and political risks that lead to financial risks. From an operational point of view, but that's not new to the mining industry and other industries as well. You obviously have other risks, and those are real life risks to take into consideration. Is it a safe place to send your people to do an installation? Will your equipment ever arrive? And I think there are many sources one can tap into, source of information to assess such risks. Local partners are critical. And then if the situation appears to be dangerous, then there are security companies that one shouldn't shy away from using if required. So that part of country risk, yeah, needs to be taken seriously into consideration, and it does also not come cheap.
Excellent, Tobias. Thanks so much. I think we might have time for just one or two more questions. And let me address the next one to you. And the question is noting and stating that mining is one of Africa's most significant export industries, with the continent being part of the world's largest producers of metals such as platinum, copper, iron ore, and uranium, among others. However, Anders, from your opinion, what is the forecast for Africa's commodity market from now and looking ahead?
If I were to offer a very cheeky answer, it would be, you know, if I knew that, I wouldn't work here, then I would play the international metal markets, you know. Having said that, I mean, for a number of metals, I mean, our expectation is that demand for resources from Africa is going to continue. You know, a switch into batteries, into electric cars and so on, it doesn't take a great genius to work backwards to identify that, you know, lithium is a metal, is a a metal that will increase in value. We've seen international copper prices picking up on the back of things like wind turbines needing a lot of copper, things like Tesla's needing a lot of copper. I would also stress that I think if you were asking me where I would put my money, then I would put my money in rare earth. I think there's a lot of potential in Africa in rare earth and a lot of deposits that have not really been identified yet.
Thanks so much, Anders. Unfortunately, we have run out of time and we are drawing close to the end of our session. So on that note, we don't have any time more for questions, but we will share those that are standing with our panelists to follow up on. I'll now hand over to our MC of the day, who will conclude today's live discussion.
Thanks, Laura. On behalf of Mining Review Africa and ESI Africa, we'd like to thank our speakers, Ian, Anders and Tobias, for taking time to share their insights with us. And we'd also like to thank you, our audience, for joining us today. We hope you've gained great value from today's panel discussion. I'd lastly like to remind you that a recording of today's webinar will be available on demand on the Mining Review Africa website. Right then, without any further ado, until our next webinar, goodbye.